This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Disrupt with me, Mpumi Nhlapo, powered by T-Systems South Africa. Thank you for joining us on the show again today. On the show, for those of you that are new to the show, we focus on disruption through in-depth conversations with industry leaders from across the spectrum. And we talk about really how disruption is changing the industry and the role that technology plays in driving that disruption. In the studio with me today, I've got Dr. Dipalo Mokete, orthopedic surgeon from BusaMed. He's also a lecturer at the University at Wits University. He's a fellow of the University of Western Ontario and one of the foremost experts in South Africa on orthopedic surgery and orthopedic procedures using computers and robotics. Quite a CV there, doctor. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the invite, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you. We had quite an interesting conversation just before the show about what orthopedics is. I asked you about prosthetics and fake limbs, and you said no. Can you maybe, just before we get into the conversation, briefly outline where this orthopedics fits in terms of the medical field?
Well, orthopedics is so it starts with the name orthopedics, and it's really it comes from it's a Latin derivation, and it comes from straightening bent bones.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a field that focuses on joints, bones, and muscles, so the musculoskeletal system. And there are two aspects to it. So there is orthopedics in general, and then there's orthopedic surgery. So the surgery would be the techniques, surgical techniques that we use to be able to sort out the diseased bones, muscles, or joints.
Okay.
And basically just get you back to health.
Okay. So let's just paint a typical scenario. I injure my knee or my hip, or I've got some sort of arthritis in there. And then what happens?
Okay. So with injuries, and specifically with arthritis, because that is my field. So my field is joint replacement, so and specifically hip and knee replacements.
Okay.
And generally with arthritis, remember, like everything else, it goes through phases. So there's an early phase, and then there's a late phase. So during the early phases for arthritis of the hip or arthritis of the knee, the treatment is what we would term in medical terms conservative treatment. So that would be things like painkillers, okay, anti-inflammatories, and sometimes with the knee joint specifically, you can inject steroids. And then there's an element also of activity modification as well. So you may need to modify your activity. So if you were a runner and you now have arthritis, so maybe things that you should take up would be swimming, things that are maybe a little bit less taxing on the joints.
I see.
And then over and above that, there are other things that can be done to adapt your circumstances. For example, a walking aid, crutches, this will definitely help. And as you get more and more disabled, then we can also look at adapting your home circumstances. So for example, things like, for example, taking away stairs,
okay,
putting in a ramp, putting in things that can help you get into and out of a bath easier. So it's all of those. So essentially what we do with arthritis early on is we start with the conservative measures, and it's only when the conservative measures fail or are starting to fail that we then start to consider being a little bit more aggressive, and the aggressive part would be operations.
Okay, and this is where now replacing the damaged or diseased organs or parts of those joints.
Yeah, so specifically for hip and knee replacements, it would be replacing the diseased joint with the prosthesis. So by prosthesis, these are metal parts, and the metal parts, the articulation is either ceramics that we couple with special plastics, or you can have ceramics on ceramic, or even metals that we then couple with special plastics as well.
Okay. And so in terms of now your expertise in the field, you are one of only two doctors, I believe, in South Africa that are certified to use a robotic arm to perform these procedures?
Yeah, so this is so maybe we need to go back a little bit there.
Okay.
So this is definitely new technology when it comes to joint replacements, okay, the field of robotics. And we, so me and a colleague, Dr. Hussein, we were fortunate in that we got training in a specific robot, which is the Mako robot.
It's called the Mako robot.
It's called the Mako robot. Okay. So it is a robot that is sold by a company called Stryker,
okay,
Corporation. And it is the most established of the robotic systems in joint replacements, without a doubt. And it is also the most sophisticated robotic system when it comes to hip and knee replacements. But we went for training just under a year ago now.
Okay.
In the U.S. We were there for a week, and then we came back and we started doing robotic joint replacements at BusaMed towards the end of last year. So we're 6 months in.
And how many have you done in the last 6 months?
In the last 6 months, I don't have the exact statistics with me, to be honest with you, but I think we're now approaching 20.
20 already.
Yeah, 20
okay.
of these, yeah.
Okay, and so maybe just because it might not be clear what we mean by this robotic arm, can you explain how it works?
Okay, so the robotic arm is, so it's a haptic arm, so it's an arm that is controlled by the surgeon.
Okay.
But I think let me take you back.
Okay.
So when it comes to robotics and joint replacements, it's the buzzword here, or the big issue here, is what we want is we want precision.
Okay.
So it is accuracy, but not just accuracy, but accuracy consistently.
Consistently,
yeah. So for us to be able to do that, it starts with the planning. With this specific robot, the Mako robot, it starts with once we have made the diagnosis that you've got arthritis, and once we have accepted that you have failed conservative treatment,
okay,
and you have become a candidate for joint replacement surgery,
yes,
then the next step would be to get a CT scan or a CAT scan of the leg, whether it is the knee or the hip.
Okay.
And that what that does is it basically gives us a 3D image of the pathology. So it gives us a 3D image of the diseased hip.
Okay.
So then once we have that, we basically look at that and we map the area that is diseased. And then we're able to superimpose the correct part into that joint. So your specific joint, we're able to do measurements that will allow us to put in the correct part.
Okay.
But not just the correct part, but the correct part put in correctly. So there's a lot that goes into joint replacement. So one of the things is, for example, if I were to do your knee replacement, right?
Yes.
And what you want is you want legs that are straight, right?
Yes.
Then I do your operation and you come out with a knee that is a little bit wonky and it's not quite straight because now you're bow-legged or now the legs are not quite as straight as you wanted them to be.
Yes.
And, you know, you basically want a straight leg. I want you to have a straight leg because it also goes beyond just the operation. If I get you a straight leg, then that operation is likely to last the longest time.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
But if I get it wrong at that point, then it will not last as long as it should.
Yes.
So as part of the planning, we will then plan the right part, the right orientation in terms of placement of that part.
Okay.
In your bone. And this is long before we even touch you as a patient.
Okay.
Then the next step is you would then come in for surgery. The planning has been done.
We know exactly what we want
to
do.
We know exactly what we want to do, how we want to place the parts, what parts we want to place in. And once you come in for surgery, then we go through a process where we will then tell the machine. So this is a process that is called mapping. So essentially what happens is that we paint on your bones, and what we paint on the bones with a special instrument, that information is fed back to the computer, and then the computer will then look at that information, look at the scan that it's got, be able to tell exactly where I was touching, what I was touching, and it basically is able to then construct a roadmap for me as to how we're going to do the operation, where we're going to cut. And then the next part will be, once that part is done, once the roadmap part is done. So think of it like navigation.
Okay.
So where you want to go from home to come to Cliff Central.
Yes.
And you want to take a certain route to come to Cliff Central.
Okay.
You will tell the machine exactly where you want to go. So it's got coordinates where you are, coordinates where you want to go.
Yes.
So it's exactly the same thing. So at that point, we've done the planning, we're telling it the coordinates, it knows exactly where it should go, and more importantly, where it shouldn't go.
I see. Okay.
Then once that part is done, then we know that once we kick the machine into action, and I think the important part here is to understand that it's not an autonomous robot.
So you still operate the arm?
I still operate the arm. So I bring the arm into the surgical field. So the operation is, remember, for me to be able to do the operation, I do the operation on bone, the joint itself.
Yes.
So I still have to, in the normal manner, open up to be able to access the bone.
Yes.
The only difference, though, is that I can now open up. I don't have to make a huge cut. I can now make a cut that is as long as is necessary, because I don't necessarily have to see the entire joint, because I've got the coordinates.
Ah, okay.
Once I've made a cut and accessed the joint, then I bring in the arm into play. And then once it is within a certain distance from the bone, it knows this, because I've already told it where the bone is. It already knows what the bone looks like. And then it is for us at that point to then pull on the trigger. And then as I pull on the trigger, I will then move it into position, and I will move it around, being guided by the robot and the computer at that point.
Okay.
If I stray out of the area that I've mapped, it will stop. So it will not allow me to stray.
And so you mentioned, which is an interesting part then, because you mentioned that what it does is it enables you then to be consistent, to provide the same level of quality consistently.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because remember, we've mapped the area that we're going to cut, the bone that we're going to cut. And it will only cut that bone. It will not stray. It will not go beyond that bone, which also makes it safer, because remember, we are cutting bone, but there are ligaments, there are blood vessels as well at the back.
Absolutely.
And you don't want to stray. You don't want to go there. So it makes it, in a sense, it makes it very safe to do the operation, but also very, very accurate.
Absolutely.
And this is what this is where it becomes a game changer. And this is what we've been lacking all along. So a skilled surgeon, a skilled orthopedic surgeon who does joint replacements consistently, so a joint replacement surgeon, will get it right a lot of the time, but not all of the time. So it takes away that human element where we are given to being error prone, and just because we are human.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, like the example that I put to you earlier on, that if I, you know, if my cat dog died this morning, I can't be the same guy that I was yesterday when I was celebrating my 47th birthday.
Absolutely.
I absolutely can't. That emotion, it affects me. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a human. And if I'm doing five joint replacements that day, that aspect will come back in, and I may do a very good job on four of them, and maybe one I may do a good job. But the point is, what you want is you don't want to be that guy who ends up with a good job. You want to be that person who has a very good job. But this then takes that human element out of it and allows you to be able to do a good job in just about every patient.
Every cent, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask the question like this then. We've seen discussions, and I've had guests here talking about autonomous vehicles and autonomous driving vehicles. And I know there has been movement in the medical space to get to autonomous robots performing procedures. One we talked about earlier was the RoboDoc.
Yes.
So what has the success been with moving? Because at the moment, I mean, yours is an augmented state. So you are still there physically operating the robot, but it guides you and it keeps you on course.
Absolutely.
But there's an alternative technology space where you tell the robot what it needs to do and it performs the procedure itself.
Yeah, so again, with that technology, so we've been there in orthopedics.
Yes.
So 10 years ago. We already had that technology.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, we already had that technology.
Autonomous, able to do the operation or the procedures itself.
Yes, yes, yes. But I think it was a step too far, and that part still needs to be finessed. There was a lot of discomfort. So the problem with that is there were robots that were doing that, but when they got it wrong, they got it spectacularly wrong. And again, you know, you're dealing with human life here, and you don't want that to be the case. So this is what is nice about the robotic arm, is that the control, it doesn't take away the control from the person who's doing the operation. So you as a surgeon are still in control.
Okay.
As opposed to those autonomous systems where you punched in the information into the computer and then had it working. And particularly with a hip, it was very impressive to see. Impressive to see it do its job. Okay. But there were mistakes that were made, and I think it's technology that we will probably revisit in time.
Okay.
But for now, this is the most sophisticated robot that, again, looking at the robots that are on the market, it is the most, the Mako robot, which is the one that we use, is the most sophisticated of the ones that are available at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if we're talking about autonomous, then there's probably a middle ground there. I'm thinking remote operation, so where, you know, there's a human being physically operating the machine or the robot, but they're not necessarily in the same space. What's advent like then in that space?
Yeah, so again, I think it's a big issue at the moment is that the technology is still very expensive.
Okay.
But it, without a doubt, it's enabling technology. And we have to, we've got to accept that and use it to enable us to be able to do operations, not just in advanced countries, but also be able to have the same technology in developing countries as well.
Yes.
Because technology can, again, technology can be a game changer. This is without a doubt. And with this robot, we can get to a point where we have a specialized type of doctor or technician, medical technician,
yes,
who drives the robot but doesn't necessarily do the planning for the operation. So the planning for the operation still becomes the province or the preserve of the orthopedic surgeon.
Okay.
Because ultimately he still takes ultimate responsibility.
Yes.
But he can help with the planning. But once the planning is done, then you can have a robotic technician to drive the robot to be able to do the operation, but under the supervision of the orthopedic surgeon. And what that would ultimately help us do is it would help us to be able to roll out the technology even into those areas that are underserved, those areas where we do not have currently orthopedic surgeons, or orthopedic surgeons are not willing to move to such areas.
Mm.
Instead of bringing the patients to the bigger centers, we can take the machines and the technicians to those centers so that even those patients can have these operations. They can have the benefit of these operations. So because the big issue with these operations, whether you do them in a conventional sense or you do them with enabling technology, it still starts with the planning. If you get the planning wrong, you're unlikely to get a good outcome.
Okay.
So if the planning is spot on, then the execution is not that difficult, certainly not with robotics. So it can help us to also extend the benefits of joint replacements to areas that are underserved and also areas within Africa itself that have not had this opportunity.
Absolutely.
To have joint replacements, yeah.
So, and then is there still then a significant role for surgeons? I mean, once you're able to do these plans, isn't the next step that the plans are going to become easier to do as well?
The plans will become easier to, but remember at the end of the day, even for surgeons, what you want for the surgeons is you want to make things easier for the surgeons. That's what you want.
Yes.
You want to make the operation easier for the surgeon. But at the same time, it's not just about making it easier. It's about making it easier, but at the same time, being able to guarantee good outcomes.
Okay.
So if you can merge those two together, this would be beautiful, because then suddenly you've got surgeons that are using enabling technology to make things easier and simpler for themselves, but at the same time we're able now to guarantee very good outcomes in most of our patients, if not all our patients. The ultimate would be to be able to do that in all of our patients. So I don't think you will take away that role of a surgeon away completely, but like everything else, why should there be a mystery when it comes to what we do?
Yeah.
Ultimately,
elaborate on that.
Well, ultimately, if you come to me with an arthritic hip or an arthritic knee,
yes.
What do you want? You want me to sort out your pain and your disability.
Yes.
You want me to improve your quality of life. You basically want to get back to where you were when you were healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. Throughout time, for example, with hip replacements, so the procedure of hip replacement, so they basically finessed it towards the end of the 70s.
Okay.
And we've continuously improved the techniques, the materials that we put in, the parts that we put in, because ultimately what we want is we want that hip, once it is done, we want you to forget that you even had a hip replacement or a knee replacement.
Like nothing ever happened.
Like it's the sort of thing that maybe first year anniversary you will remember, second year anniversary you'll remember.
Yeah.
By the 10th year, you've forgotten completely because you're not taking painkillers, you're not using a walking aid, you're back to normal. The same way that now you don't sit there thinking, I've got a left hip, a right hip, a left knee, a right. You don't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because these are things that are there, that are part of you, and that you expect to function.
Yes.
Right. You get up from there, you walk to the bathroom, you're not thinking, left hip, right hip, a little bit of pain, you know, this is what we want to get to.
Okay.
And we're not quite there yet. And we hope that as we continue to improve, and as we continue to use enabling technology to help us get better outcomes, that we will hopefully get to that point where we can guarantee that once the operation is done.
Yeah.
So, again, it is that where you use the technology to make things easier, but at the same time, we don't want the hip replacements or the knee replacements that are done in a certain way or that are done with robotics to be the preserve of people that have the means. We want to be able to extend it to all people who have arthritis of the hip and arthritis of the knee that has failed conservative treatment. This is the ultimate. You want to help, as a doctor, you want to help everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You get satisfaction from helping people and people being helped and actually enjoying a better quality of life. This is what gives us satisfaction.
Mm. So you also mentioned, sorry, just to touch on helping people, that there are potential other use cases for the arm. So in urology, you mentioned, in spinal treatments. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Right. So I think that probably now, as we speak, they're probably the most well-known of these robotic systems. And in a sense, one of the pioneers is the Da Vinci robot.
Okay.
But having said that, mind you, robotics started in orthopedics, even before urology. So the Da Vinci is used mostly in urology.
Okay.
But also now, I understand that it's being used in general surgery and gynecology.
And how does that
quite successful. So that works slightly differently in that there are arms that are controlled remotely. So as the surgeon, you sit in a booth.
Okay.
And
outside of the
outside
theater.
Of the surgical field. And you then control the arms, and the arms do the work. But then again, it's not autonomous in the sense that you, as a surgeon, are still controlling the arms to be able to do the work. So you're looking at a screen, and you are controlling the arms remotely to do work within the abdomen.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why would one be preferable or not to the other? So, because, you know, the Marco arm, you're physically in the theater.
Yes.
Operating the arm. And this yes. one, you're in a booth remotely. Yes. I'm operating yes. the two arms to do the procedure.
Yeah. So I think at the moment, because of the technology that we have, so with joint replacements, we actually have to put in parts into the joint. So we have to resurface that joint.
I see.
And the parts that we put in, you've got to make space for those parts anyway.
Yes.
So you've actually got to open the skin so that you have access to the bone, so that once you've done your work, you're able to put in those parts.
Okay.
So you do have to make cuts that are long enough to be able to do that. And for me to do the bone preparation, theoretically it's possible. You can do it through very, very small cuts, do the entire work, but you would still have to open to be able to put in the resurfacing parts.
Yes.
So it probably makes more sense in orthopedics for now to do it this way as opposed to doing it remotely.
I see.
Like with a Da Vinci robot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with all these robots, I mean, where do you see the medical field going? Do you see that technology is really having a massive impact vis-a-vis like clinical type of advancements within the space?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. So in the field of orthopedics, this is, at the moment, it's big. It's big. And when it comes to, it's the sort of disruptive technology that if you look at the major orthopedic companies, so the companies that make the parts for us.
Yes.
So you will find that all the majors, they have in one way or another adopted this sort of technology. So the Mako would be at the forefront without a doubt. And there are other companies as well that have started doing the same, maybe not as sophisticated. But I also hear that there are companies that are now also working with Google.
Okay.
Yes, on exactly this. And going back to one of the previous questions, we're also looking at it not just in orthopedics, it is there, it is working. But we're now also looking at, so the companies are now also looking at the same technology being used in neurosurgery. And it has started in spine surgery, most certainly. So in other fields of orthopedics as well. And ultimately, so the technology at the moment is admittedly still very expensive.
Okay.
Yeah. But hopefully in time, as people get to accept it more, as we see the outcomes, so it's still a little bit early. Only time will tell in terms of how cost-effective the technology is.
Yes.
But I feel that in one form or the other, it is an advancement that we'll continue building upon. And as much as we are now very comfortable with the fact that your car, the car that you drive in,
yes,
most of it was put together by robots. but we're very comfortable with that situation.
Yes.
So other, you wouldn't be comfortable if I said to you, you know, we got some guys in Uteneg and they jackhammer screws and stuff, and they put this car together, and this is your new car. You're more comfortable with the fact that, yeah, you know what, it was made by robots, but it also means that it's the consistency.
Yes.
Is much higher.
Yes.
Margins of getting things wrong, much lower.
Yes.
So you are more likely to get a consistently good product, and we accept that. And the same will happen in the medical field. It's happening.
Sure. Now, let me then look at it. If I look at students coming through the system, you're a lecturer at Wits University.
Mm-hmm.
Is technology becoming a big part of the curriculum, or is it still really the traditional methods that are taught?
So I think before we go to technology, you still have to teach your students on traditional methods.
Okay.
And the importance of that is that if the technology fails, you still have to have a fail-safe mechanism.
Yes.
To continue.
Yes.
Doing what you're doing.
Okay.
And not only that, but the principles, a lot of the time the principles, you learn the principles better by going through the old ways of doing things. Learn those, and then on top of that, then you incorporate the enabling technology. Then my feeling is that when you do that, then you will have a better quality of surgeon than if you get a surgeon to specifically do the robotic surgery without knowing how to do the conventional surgery.
I hear you.
So you still have to go through the whole gambit before we can then say that you are qualified as a surgeon to be able to do the procedures.
Yeah. But let's assume then, like you've said, that they are getting the fundamentals in terms of the traditional methods. But would you say that there is enough focus on technology and how it can enable medicine that is being instilled in medical practitioners coming through the system? You know, if I look at your case, for example, you're one of only two in the country. And I don't know whether that's the same for other technology-driven procedures in medicine or not. But I guess I'm trying to understand whether technology is really being adopted specifically in South Africa to augment or support what we're doing within the medical space.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's the market will demand it.
Okay.
The market will demand it. So the people will demand it ultimately. And here in South Africa, we still have well-developed medicine in a sense that if you fall ill, you don't fly to London to go and have your medical condition looked into.
Yes.
You will find the right person to do it locally. And in as much as it is frustrating in a sense in that it's maybe not happening as quickly as one would want, but I think we are moving in that direction. In terms of the train, remember there are barriers, and the barriers are economic barriers at the end of the day. So yep. It's also, there's also relevance which comes into it. So you also have to be able to justify why you would want to have such sophisticated technology when a great majority of people don't have access to joint replacements, for example.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, like I said, the market will demand it. People will start asking for it. And I think also the other issue is, like any other technology, so with this technology, with the Mako robot, so the Mako robot was the first orthopedic robot in South Africa. In fact, the first in Africa.
Okay.
Yeah. And at the time when Busamed acquired the robot, there were about 400 in the U.S., about 10 in Australia, one in the United Kingdom. So it's pretty cutting-edge technology,
yes,
to be honest.
Yes.
But the same way that, so going back a little bit when it comes to robotics, so let's look at the Da Vinci robot, for example. Mm-hmm. So the one that they use for mostly urological procedures.
The one that's operated remotely.
The one that's operated remotely. Yes. So there's, in the country now, there's it's probably about 10, probably more.
Okay.
But when it's exactly the same story, when he came into the country, there was only one. There were only a few people that could operate it. But what happened over time is there was a demand for it.
Okay.
And people saw a benefit in it. And people started demanding it. And that is why now you've got more than 10 in the entire country.
Okay.
Yeah. Because A, it starts with, you've got to start somewhere. You've got to start somewhere. And like any other technology, so let's look at cars, for example. So if you look at Johannesburg in the late 1800s,
yes,
there were no cars. In probably the early 1900s, there was one car.
Yeah.
But now, you can't do without a car. It's for me, I think it's exactly the same. You've got to start somewhere.
Absolutely.
And the first car that came to this country was, it was very expensive. It was also one of those things that are difficult to justify at that time.
Yes.
Based on what was obtaining at that time.
Yes.
But like every other technology, cell phones come into mind. It's exactly the same with cell phones. So we could not communicate because we did not have enough telephone lines in the country. But what cell phone technology did in terms of our communication and advancement of people, it's again one of those disruptive technologies that have just been, it's been spectacular.
Absolutely.
And you can't even think back to the days when you didn't have a cell phone or access to a cell phone. And I feel that it's exactly the same. You got to start somewhere. It may sound like disruptive technology now, but in time, it will just be enabling technology. And it cannot be the preserve of developed nations when it actually, you can make a good case for it, even in developing countries. Once we get that price barrier out of the equation,
absolutely,
then it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Because, like I said, ultimately what you want is you want to help every person who has a hip or a knee complaint, arthritis that has failed conservative treatment. We want to make their life better.
Mm. And then perhaps then maybe there's scope for us to start innovating and developing some of these technologies locally.
Absolutely.
Here in the country.
No, for sure, for sure. But remember, you can't do it in a vacuum.
Absolutely.
It always starts with you get this. You work with it, you then are able to identify unique cases or unique where you find that maybe in certain respects there are differences in our populations compared to other populations.
Okay.
And this is what will then allow you to be able to innovate.
I see.
And develop something, even locally, that can rival what we have.
So basically, this is the seed stages at the moment. Early stages.
Yes, I think so. I think it is. But again, you've got to. It's one of those technologies that you look. It's for me personally something that I like very much, and I enjoy using it to do operations. And there will be other people who will come into the fold. And as we talk, as we discuss, as we problems crop up and issues crop up, then we will be able to come up with something that is bespoke for us, for our country as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be as expensive. And maybe once we are able to interact with the technology, learn how the technology works, then maybe we can also come up with something that is that makes more sense when it comes to the economics.
I hear you, yeah. So, Doc, let me talk now a little bit about you.
Mm.
Orthopedics.
Mm.
Did you always know that you wanted to go into this field?
Well, my father is a doctor. My elder brother also went into medicine. So, I sort of went into it because that was a thing to do.
Yes.
Right. But when I was in medical school, when I was in my third year, that is when I decided that, yes, this is the thing for me. In fact, it was my fourth year. And I'll tell you, it's very simple.
Uh-huh.
So at that time, I'd been exposed, so it was my fourth year, I'd been exposed to other disciplines in medicine. And for me, the one that had the most immediacy and the one that made the most sense to me was orthopedics. And it is because with orthopedics, the problem presents itself much quicker.
Okay.
So if you have a problem with your knee, I will examine you. I will do x-rays. And pretty much thereafter, I am most times I'm able to work out what the problem is. Not only that, but once I've identified what the problem is, I can also say whether I can help you or not.
Fairly quickly.
Fairly quickly. And whether, if I can't help you, I can always send you to somebody else who can help you. And then, once that part is done, whether it's an operation or painkillers or whatever, again, the results are pretty quick. Because if you've got a sprain, we strap you, we give you painkillers, 2-3 weeks, you should be getting better.
Mm.
The frustrating thing with the other specialties was that a lot of the time you're shooting in the dark, and when it comes to a problem, you come with a tummy ache. There's maybe 10, 20, 30 things that it could be.
Hmm.
And then I've got to work my way through them. And then even then, it could be the most obscure of those 30 things. And less so in orthopedics. So is why, to me, it made a lot of sense. The diagnosis, the immediacy of the diagnosis, also the immediacy of me being able to make a call whether I can help or can't help, and also the results having made that call. Again, you do x-rays if it's a broken bone, you set it, or if you need to operate, you operate on it, and I can show you x-rays immediately after the operation there. And pretty much based on that x-rays, we can predict more or less how well you're going to do.
I see. Yeah. I see. And then you also spend time in Canada. You did a fellowship there.
Yeah, so what I did is I went to medical school in Cape Town, and then finished in 94, and then spent time in England doing surgery. And then I came back to South Africa and did in 2000, and then started orthopedics here.
Okay.
So did my rotation, and I took a liking to joint replacements. And once I had done joint replacements, I spent additional time here doing joint replacements purely, and then I went to Canada to do a fellowship. So essentially finishing school in joint replacements in London, Ontario.
I see. Okay. And then becoming someone who wanted to focus on the technology side of things, how did that come about? Was it by chance, or had you always wanted to be kind of bleeding edge in terms of what's happening in the discipline?
I think it's just getting technology helps you get a clear understanding of what is going on. And it also, it's enabling technology. So again, based on my ethos, it also helps you to be able to help people. And my feeling is the consistency thing has to come into it. And you've got to be satisfied most of the time.
Okay.
Once you have done an operation or helped a patient, and be comfortable most of the time that the outcomes will be good. And this is what technology does. And with technology regarding joint replacement, it also makes it exciting, I must say.
Yes.
It really does make it exciting, because it's if you are able to keep up with the technology, then it also allows you, I think, in time to be able to innovate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And where do you see this innovation going? What do you see on the horizon?
On the horizon, what I see, look, me personally, ideally, I see a time when, so it's about, again, it goes back to what I've just said to you. It is about helping as many people as is possible that have these hip and knee, arthritis of the hip and knee.
Okay.
To improve their quality of life. So I see a time when we will have, but this is in the future though, where we will have an orthopedic surgeon doing the planning for patients who need joint replacements, the same orthopedic surgeon supervising surgeries on these patients, such that at the moment, in a day, I can do a maximum of 5 hip and knee replacements. But I see a time when I can do 10 hip replacements in a space of 3 hours, but where I am not necessarily physically doing the work, but supervising, having done the plan myself.
And that becomes very disruptive.
It becomes very disruptive, but what it does, it means that what I could do in 3 hours, if I could do 1 in 3 hours, now I can do 10 in 3 hours. So that is 9 more people that benefit from that technology, 9 more people that are helped in that space of time.
And you see that on the near horizon?
Not near horizon, but certainly I think in the next 15 years, this is what we'll be seeing.
Okay.
Yeah, because it shouldn't be a luxury. It shouldn't be a luxury. It should be something that is extended to everybody. So we can't get a situation where if you have a headache, right?
Yes.
Some people will benefit from a Panado.
Yes.
But some people cannot get access to a Panado and just have to suffer the consequences of a headache. Everybody should have access to a Panado. And it's the same when it comes to joint replacements. It should stop being a luxury, but rather a basic of part of our healthcare.
Yes.
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 Because let me tell you, when it comes to health economics, it's actually been worked out for hip replacements specifically that hip replacements, when it comes to economics, right, it has been worked out that it is the most cost effective operation to do.
Interesting.
Yes. And that has to, now think about it. So if you're a young man who's got arthritis of the hip.
Yes.
So you are employed. You pay taxes.
Yes.
You have a family. You support your family. But now, as the arthritis progresses, you're in pain. You've got to be buying painkillers. But now you can't even do your job.
Because of the pain, yeah.
Because of the pain. So now you're disabled. But now you also need people to look after you. But now you can't support your family. Now you're on a disability grant. Now you go to state facilities for your medical care. So we have taken you from a person who was contributing to the economy of the country to somebody who's now dependent on social grants.
I see.
We do your hip replacement. We can take you back exactly to the point where you were at. Employed, paying taxes,
And contributing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So on that basis, that is how they calculated it to be the most cost effective surgical procedure. Better than doing a heart transplant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And, Doc, you operate within the BusaMed group. You do a lot of the orthopedic work for that group of hospitals.
So not for the group. So I work at specifically Buisamed Modderfontein Orthopedic and Oncology Hospital.
Okay.
So that's where I'm based, and that's where I do the joint replacements, and that is where
the robotic arm.
Yes, it is based. So it doesn't travel.
Okay.
It is based purely at that hospital.
Okay. Yeah. And the facilities there, I mean, I'm sure it must be state of the art, futuristic type of facilities to house this type of technology.
Yeah, look, I think we've been the hospital, I think it's the vision of Dr. Mji, who the chairman of Buisamed.
Okay.
He always wanted to have a state of the art hospital.
Okay.
And I think the Buisamed Modderfontein Orthopedic and Oncology Hospital is the flagship when it comes to the technology that is within the hospital. So it's a paperless hospital. So the Mako is but one of the technologies that are within the hospital. There are others as well. And I understand also the oncology part of it. They have state of the art machines when it comes to oncology.
Okay.
So I must say it's a comfortable place to work from.
Yeah, because I would imagine it's not just about, you know, having the $1 million robotic arm. It's all the support systems, the infrastructure that you need to get the best out of it.
Yes, no, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Doc, just before we wrap up then, I mean, I think I've got a pretty good view of your vision for Africa in the context of making these types of procedures readily available to everybody.
Mm.
But then what I want to now ask you about is disruption. I mean, we've kind of mentioned it today and we've spoken briefly about it. Can you explain to me or describe to me what disruption would mean in your world? You know, if you were to offer a definition of disruption, what would that be?
In my world, it's that technology that comes out of the left field and revolutionizes what we do. And beyond just revolutionizing what we do, it is that technology that comes out of the left field but makes things simpler, easier for us, but also allows us to be able to guarantee the best outcomes for our patients. And disruptive technology, for me, it's not that flash in the pan.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
In the sense that there is something that comes in that is completely different, that sort of takes over and then dies over time.
Yes.
Because we just took to it because it was a fad, it was a thing to do.
Yes.
For me, it is that thing that changes and stays on and becomes normal in time.
Fascinating. Thank you so much, Doctor. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Dr. Mokete, orthopedic surgeon from Modderfontein Buisamed Hospital. Talking to us today about robotic arms and technology within the orthopedic surgery environment, but more broadly about how technology and specifically robotics are changing the way doctors are able to offer more consistent and quality procedures within the environments. Thank you to T-Systems, our sponsors, for making the show possible once again. To follow T-Systems, you can go to www.un-outsource.co.za. For joining us today, thank you to everybody who's joined us and been listening. We look forward to seeing you again on another episode of Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Have a wonderful day.
This is CliffCentral.com.